Welcome to Letter from the Capitol, a bi-monthly podcast covering national security, economic, and cultural issues.
Welcome to Letter from the Capitol. I'm your guest host, Roy Murdoch. No doubt you've heard plenty in the news these days about immigration, America's border with Mexico, terrorism, Ebola, and Obamacare. As we'll discuss today, these matters are all connected. Let's see how. We Americans often discuss the matter of immigration. People coming across the border from Mexico, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and there are people on the left, middle, and right who debate about whether these people should be sent back at once, whether they should be integrated in our society, and of course, we all try to think about their impact on jobs, education, public health, and those sorts of matters. But I think we need to spend a lot more time thinking about national security and what the repercussions are of having a wide open border along the American South, and what that does for America's national security, not just our finances or our concerns about health, education, and welfare. A very important way to think about this comes from a document issued by the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. It's called the Immigration Yearbook 2013, which recently came out with fresh statistics on people who were captured at the U.S.-Mexican border. Of course, there are people from Mexico, El Salvador, Honduras, etc., who are there. But they're people from countries which are far, far less friendly to the United States than those I just mentioned. For example, Afghanistan. Did you know that last year, 70 people were caught at the U.S.-Mexican border from Afghanistan, the country where U.S. troops are still fighting resilient elements of the Taliban? Then you have Syria, the home of ISIS, that vicious terrorist group which is busy brutalizing people in Iraq and Syria and beheading people, including American citizens. People from Syria, a grand total of 72, were captured at the U.S.-Mexican border last year. Then we have Sudan, a country which is designated as a state sponsor of terrorism by the U.S. State Department. 168 people were captured at the border of Mexico and the United States trying to get into America. Then we have Iran, the country that's been run by the mullahs since the late 1970s. 257 people were captured trying to get into the United States from Mexico, from Iran, and of course that is a country that's very busy trying to produce its own nuclear bomb, atomic weapons, and God only knows what the Middle East would look like if they actually succeeded. Then we have Nigeria, the home of Boko Haram, another terrorist group that is busy rounding up teenage girls, pulling them into sex slavery, and wreaking all kinds of havoc in Nigeria. 492 people were captured at the U.S.-Mexican border trying to get into the United States in the year 2013. Now, a grand total of 14 countries deserve a very close scrutiny here. Those are four countries that are official state sponsors of terrorism. Those are Cuba, Iran, Sudan, and Syria, as well as 10 other countries of interest, as they're called. These are 10 nations through which, if you travel and then come to the United States, you're going to get additional screening by the TSA once you land in the U.S. If they see that you've traveled through those countries, they're going to take a close look and make sure that you're kosher. So a grand total of 14 countries that are on that list, either the 10 countries of interest or the 14 nations that are state sponsors of terrorism. Among the citizens of those 14 countries, 5,063 of them were caught at the U.S.-Mexican border trying to gain entry into the United States of America across that land border. Now, these are just the ones that we know about. These are just the ones who were caught by the U.S. Border Patrol. How many more people from those places actually got through, entered the United States, and are walking among us, ready to do who knows what? Some of them may be here to work. Some of them may be here just to escape chaos and tyranny and oppression in their countries. I hope that's all they want. Some of them may be here, in fact, with nefarious intentions, with the intention of hurting and even killing Americans. The answer is nobody knows. We have no idea how many people from those 14 countries are here in the United States today, people who actually successfully snuck across the U.S.-Mexican border. And that is something that should concern every American citizen, and one more reason why we need to get the U.S.-Mexican border sealed, secured, and under control, not just because of the illegal immigrants who come in and have an impact on our social services, but for reasons of national security, because we literally have thousands of people from countries hostile to us, including state sponsors of terrorism, trying to come into the United States. Fortunately, we catch some of them. My fear is that some of them are getting through, and who knows what they may have in mind. I think we all remember exactly where we were on September 11th, 2001, when Al-Qaeda sent 19 hijackers who took over jumbo jets and smacked them into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and the fourth jet, of course, crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania after the passengers rebelled and took control of that aircraft. Tremendous tragedy, a tremendous tragic attack that killed some 3,000 Americans. And I don't think any of us ever will forget where we were the day that that happened. Luckily for us, we've not seen another spectacular, organized, dramatic attack of that sort. Unfortunately, what we see now with increasing commonality is terrorists who act on their own. Individual terrorists who create their own personal jihads, not anywhere of the scale of what we saw on September 11th, but things that pop up in places you wouldn't expect. And unfortunately, we're seeing these with increasing frequency. For example, Major Nidal Hassan, an army psychologist, embraced radical Islam. In November 2009, he whipped out a gun and opened fire on fellow soldiers at Fort Hood, Texas. He reportedly shouted Allahu Akbar as he killed 13 people and wounded another 30. Then we have Alton Nolan, who converted to Islam and changed his name to Yaqim Yisrael. He tried to get his co-workers to convert to Islam too. When that failed, he went late September to his former workplace, a food processing plant in Oklahoma. He then beheaded Colleen Hufford and stabbed another woman named Tracy Johnson. Fortunately, Mark Vaughn, a supervisor who happens to be a reserve sheriff's deputy, opened fire and stopped Yaqim Yisrael. He now faces murder charges. Then we have Michael Zihaf Bibo, who also converted to Islam. On October 22, he went on a rampage in Ottawa, Canada. He shot and killed Corporal Nathan Cirillo while he and his unloaded rifle guarded Canada's National War Memorial. This terrorist then ran into the Canadian Parliament building to seek even further prey. That morning, Kevin Vickers, the Parliament Sergeant-at-Arms, saw his duties as the legislature's symbolic protector suddenly become all too genuine. Thankfully, he was armed. Vickers opened fire and killed the Muslim terrorist, no doubt preventing even further carnage. For his effective and deadly grace under pressure, I think Kevin Vickers deserves to be knighted by Queen Elizabeth II, who technically remains Canada's head of state. The very next day, the world met Zale Thompson. What happened is distressingly familiar. Zale Thompson converted to Islam and then attacked four police officers in Queens, New York, badly injuring two of them before the other two did the right thing and shot him dead. These individual killers lately have been called lone wolves. I hate that term. Wolves are graceful, majestic creatures that should be protected and allowed to flourish in the wild. Wolves also are the genetic ancestors of every dog you ever met. Can you think of anything more positive and beautiful than that? I can't either. So why do we associate these Islamofascist homicidal monsters with wolves? What did the wolves ever do to deserve that? FBI Director James Comey is right. We should stop calling these evil scum lone wolves. Comey argues that terrorists don't merit the phrase lone wolves. He recently told 60 Minutes, and I quote, "It conveys a sense of dignity I don't think they deserve," unquote. The FBI chief has a simple alternative that I think we all should embrace. Rather than lone wolves, we should call these militant Islamic killers lone rats. Rats are dirty, disgusting, and worthy of extermination, just like radical Muslim terrorists. So let's stop bathing in glory these filthy, backward, anti-Semitic, misogynistic, homophobic murderers. Instead, let's give sole practitioner terrorists the disrespect and scorn that they deserve by calling them lone rats. And then let's wipe them out, every single one of them, just like rats. The Obama administration also needs to stop calling these incidents workplace violence. First of all, we need to be honest about the enemy that America faces, militant Islam. If we pretend that Fort Hood shooter Nidal Hassan and Oklahoma beheader Yaqim Yisrael killed their colleagues because they never found the Human Resources Office, America never will get serious about confronting and crushing militant Islam. Secondly, in the case of someone like Yaqim Yisrael, dismissing his beheading and his attempted murder as some sort of office grievance leads to poor police work. If this simply were a personnel dispute, we quickly could put this all behind us, offer our best wishes to the families of the victims, and then, as best we can, move on. But if we call this tragic attack what it really was, a deadly act of violent Muslim extremism, officials then need to ask some tough questions. How did Yaqim Yisrael get radicalized? Did an extremist imam fill his head with deadly ideas? If so, can and should that dangerous cleric be stopped before he creates additional killers? Did the Oklahoma beheader have any help from anyone else at his mosque? And if so, what are we going to do about that? These questions are not easy, nor are they pleasant, but we must ask them before even more Americans get killed, thanks to radical Muslim loan rats. It's been about a year since healthcare.gov premiered in October of 2013, and I guess we're all learning how this brilliant new system is working out. A couple of interesting headlines caught my attention. One is from Breitbart.com. The headline is, Obamacare customers afraid to use benefits due to sky-high deductibles. The Associated Press also had this headline, many insured struggle with medical bills. I happen to know a small businessman out in Connecticut, and he told me about his story. He had a healthcare plan with a deductible of $2,500. That's now shot up to $5,750. A friend of his, who also is a small businessman, has a similar situation, a deductible that's gone from $2,500 up to $5,750. And his monthly premiums for himself, his wife, and his daughter, who's still in college, have shot up from $740 to $1,466, just about double. I guess this is what Obama means by quality, affordable healthcare. According to the Associated Press, a man named Edward Frank of Reynoldsville, Pennsylvania, bought a healthcare plan with a $6,000 deductible last year through healthcare.gov. He's not very happy. In fact, he said, quote, the deductibles are so high, you don't get much of anything out of it. The Associated Press did a survey, and they determined something very interesting. 19% of all privately insured adults said that they did not go to the doctor when they were sick or injured because of costs. Now, among those with high deductible plans, the figure was 29%. So what the Associated Press found is the higher deductibles go, the less likely people are to see the doctor. Now, what does that have to do with national security? Well, this may at some point intersect with a story we've been hearing a lot about in the news lately, and that is Ebola. Now, what does Obamacare have to do with Ebola? Now, it used to be that people had healthcare plans, they liked their plans, and as Obama said last year, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan. Well, that turned out to be the lie of the year, according to fact-checkers such as PolitiFact.com. So what we're finding is the people who did like their healthcare plans, in the case of some 6.3 million people whose plans were canceled because of Obamacare, their premiums have shot up, their deductibles have gone up dramatically, and people who might have been used to going to the doctor and maybe paying a $25 or $30 copay now have to shell out $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 before they actually really enjoy any healthcare benefits. Those are huge deductibles, and people are going to stay home and not see their doctors, as the Associated Press found, because it's just really too expensive to do so. So what I fear may happen is somebody may feel a little bit sick, feel a bit down, maybe think about going to the doctor and think, well, that's just too expensive. I can't really afford this $6,000 deductible. So I think I'll stay home, take some aspirin, maybe drink some orange juice. And so the person does that. And the next day, he's still not feeling very good, but he's got to go to work. So he shows up at the office, starts coughing, maybe leaves a bit early, but he's been at the office a few hours as his customers and his clients and his colleagues and other people are there. And he goes home second day and really doesn't feel very good. Well, he wakes up the third day, vomiting, diarrhea, all sorts of severe symptoms. And he finally says, I can't take any more of this. Despite the huge deductible, I finally go to the doctor 3 days after he starts getting sick. And guess what? It's not the common cold. It's not the flu. It's Ebola. And all of a sudden, somebody who might have gone in a few days earlier and gotten some treatment and not exposed others to this illness all of a sudden has a potentially deadly virus and something which, if he survives, is going to be very expensive to treat, very, very inconvenient, and something which will have a huge and negative impact on our already overwhelmed and overworked healthcare system. I hope I'm wrong. I hope this turns out to be just a little bit of overcaution, or some might even say paranoia on my part. But if it does turn out to be true, this could be an unintended consequence of Obamacare, that because it has increased costs so much and increased deductibles so much, rather than going to the doctor when they feel sick, people instead are going to be deciding to stay home, take care of themselves, because they can't afford these deductibles. And while some of them might just have to suffer with the cold or suffer with the flu, some of them might, in fact, not just have the cold or the flu, but have Ebola. And because the costs are so high to be treated and to see doctors, unfortunately, some people stay home, take care of themselves, and turn what could be a manageable situation into one completely out of control. I hope this isn't the case. I'm going to cross my fingers, and I suggest you do the same. So those are just a few items in the news and a few more reasons for Americans to remain, as Thomas Jefferson recommended, eternally vigilant. For Letter from the Capitol, I'm DeRoy Murdoch. Thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute. Letter from the Capitol is a trademark and copyright of John Wohlstetter. Rebroadcasts of this podcast are allowed only with permission of the Discovery Institute. For more information, please visit www.letterfromthecapital.com or www.discovery.org.